Dieter and Hutch. And no, we have never had a verbal or physical altercation with Lil Baby. Just for the record, I don't think anyone was concerned about that, thought that that was happening, but I just wanted to make sure that you all know that we're safe and nowhere near Lil Baby.
Yeah, that's a fact. I think I have seen him wandering around at games. I think he's close with Debo, anyway.
He was very close with Debo. He was very close with James Harden. And now forever tied to Keon White.
And now we move on.
Nothing good happens at 4 a.m. in the Mission. Here we go. The premise of this is pretty straightforward. Jake has been very deep in draft stuff. I have been deeper, but in a very like esoteric manner on draft stuff, just finding randos to.
Well, you were also locked in during the season, whereas I was watching a lot of FCS football.
Yeah, not very.
Where
helpful
I just now. Yeah, not some. It's fun, but it's not particularly helpful.
It is enjoyable. I try to take pretty copious notes during the you know, I'm such a great person to watch a game with on a Saturday, just constantly on my phone or in my little notebook. And then I try to accumulate all of it. So Jake will text me at 10:30 at night as I've given up on life for the evening. And he's just like, oh, man, this Miami defensive tackle. And thank God I organized the notes to where I can sound somewhat coherent and have some sort of a take. So I try to make my Saturdays count. Jake's catching up on Saturdays, and at some point we'll have a product for you. But in the meantime, this is a good exercise. This is Jake's idea. It's a good exercise. There's a lot of names that are getting tossed around because we are in information silly season.
It's in the peak of anything is possible, right?
Correct.
Like, no idea is too stupid because we don't have testing numbers. Teams haven't really interviewed players. All of the stuff that sort of works itself out and shapes a draft board naturally, it's not out there, which is why it's really fun. And I think we learned this last year of when you watch the tape before there's actually measurables and you get a sense of like, hey, I really like this guy. And then you go, normally we would ignore him, but we've already seen the tape. So I like this time of year. It gets really weird, though. There's a lot of possibilities.
Right. And I would venture to say that we've seen conservatively a dozen names consistently tied to the Niners at 27. Of course, the Niners have no idea who they're taking. They're not even having that conversation about who they're taking in the first round. They're really in the middle of it now, and it'll really get going here after the combine where they can start to have some concrete concepts of what it is they're looking for and the ideas and the guys that they like, the guys that they dislike. They can put some gold helmets on the board, if you will.
They love their gold helmet boys.
And then there's, you know, we have this nadir between now and free agency where it's just mock draft season. And again, anything goes. We're not going to go and do a 7-round mock or anything like that. That is a tried and true YouTube practice that we probably will only partake in once or twice in the meantime, as we go to 2 days a week here and then ramp it up again 3 days a week right before the draft. And obviously, as news breaks, we'll have more and more. But we had, you know, last week we did three guys that, hey, Jake, check this guy out. Hey, Dieter, check this guy out. And we can talk about them a little bit, guys that we're into right now or guys that we're not into right now. I wanted to lean more this way, and this is your idea. A lot of names are getting tossed around for the Niners in the first round right now. Who is the guy you suggested that we just don't want the Niners to take? We don't see the fit. We don't see the idea. We don't even see the talent in some cases. And Jake, it's your idea. Do you want to go first or second? Don't make the same mistake Kyle Shanahan did, by the way.
I will take it. I'll take the ball first.
Great.
If it was overtime, I would not. If it was overtime, I'd let you go first.
Do you know the rules?
I do know the rules.
Good.
I do know the rules. And we're not playing for the third possession.
We're
playing to win it on the second.
Love it.
That's how we're doing it. I'm going to go with Denzel Boston out of Washington.
And again, now, just to be very clear, sorry, because I was rambling in beforehand.
Yep.
To be very clear, this is the guy who is being talked about as a possibility for the 49ers at 27 that we, as the thumbnail suggests, want John Lynch to avoid. Get away from him.
Yeah, I don't think he would be a fit. He's a guy that even if you just looked at like NFL mock draft database, he's currently the guy slotted in. Because I'm like, is it really? Oh, yeah, no, this is the exact range he slotted in for. I don't get it. I don't get it. I think he is, and again, it's early, but like I think this is like a third round player.
Mm.
I think he's got great size. I don't think he's like a mauling blocker, which I know I'm talking about a wide receiver, but he's a big guy.
6'4", 210.
Yeah, I want to see some aggression. So you're like, can he play tight end? No, definitely not. But can he be like a big possession wide receiver? Sure. But like, what does that do for you in this offense, in this scheme where you need to get aggressively faster? You want guys who snap out of the routes.
He does not do that.
He does not do that. I saw him run a route where he stopped at like the 15-yard line and then slowly curved it and didn't break out until he was at the 10. And to me, I can't imagine like a worse fit in a Kyle Shanahan offense than a guy who I think he actually does have long speed. I think he'll probably run like a 4.5 if I had to guess, which for a guy that size is fine.
Very good.
But at the same time, like he does not have short area quickness. He's not snappy. And that's not to say you need to be like a scatty, snappy wide receiver. You know, like I talked about, I think in the Hutch report, like Zachariah Branch is a guy I'm like not loving because he's doing a lot of TikTok nonsense. It's a lot of like, hey, maybe run a route.
Yeah.
I just don't see Boston putting a foot in the ground, snapping out and breaking out quickly. And I see constantly where he's getting pushed towards the sidelines because he's like, he doesn't have the speed or the hesitation or the craft to really like create the separation he needs. And then he's getting like pushed into the sidelines and then it's okay. He's tall. So like he might win a jump ball on these like go balls they throw up and he's got good hands. That's great. But in terms of like what the 49ers need, and they need speed and they need guys who can run routes, I'm not seeing it. I'm really not seeing the fit at all. And I don't think he's a first round talent.
I agree with you on not being a first round talent. This is very clearly to me, Teteroa McMillan chasing. This is just the league being like, who won offensive rookie of the year? Oh, this is the guy who most closely resembles him physically, but he doesn't resemble him at all. And, yeah. And to be very clear, you can go back, check. I was not in on Teteroa McMillan in the same way everybody else was, right? I saw some questionable physicality, all these things. But he made a lot of sense for Carolina at 8 yeah. because they needed just a big body receiver because he doesn't have time to separate with
crafty.
Bryce Young.
He's right. crafty. He's not like a great separator, great route runner, but he's like crafty and just attacks the ball in a way that's pretty rare.
So this is not only Teteroa McMillan chasing. It might also be when we're talking about the 49ers, Juwan Jennings chasing. And you think, okay, what's Juwan Jennings? Big body. Somebody Slow. Who's going to win contested catches. There's that. But here's the thing. I don't think that Juwan Jennings ever got enough credit for how crisply and succinctly and distinctly he ran his routes. When he put his foot in the ground and decided he was going right after going straight ahead, he got right real fast. He got left real fast. He was shockingly shifty, and it was something that never translated on television screens, but really was apparent in person, and by the fact that he was able to create, with his limited athletic upside, yep. any separation whatsoever, that he wasn't completely blanketed by little guys.
Yeah, he was like a guy who operated in a phone booth, and where he could just, in those little areas where you're like in a congested space and they're trying to figure out which way you go, he really reoriented his weight well. He like broke off. He'd use his physicality in a lot of good ways. And I just don't see the same with Boston at all.
He is a loopy route runner. He doesn't use his physicality enough. He is an unbelievable red zone option. That is undeniable. When details are not as important and it's just man v man, yeah, throw the ball up to him. But now you're going up against NFL competition. So those 20 touchdowns the last 2 years, it's probably 5, 10. And again, I can see a world in which another team feels like they need him. Like, again, you look at Teteroa McMillan in Carolina. Why was it that they needed a big body wide receiver? Pretty succinctly because they knew their quarterback could not create time. He had to get the ball out. They had to Tua it a little bit. And so you need a guy who can win in close contact, needs no separation. Everything's going to be a 50-50 ball at best. You can throw it to that guy. I don't see the deftness, as you noted, that McMillan had. I don't see the use of size in the same way McMillan had. I see a loopy route runner, and it's totally unfair because he's 4 inches taller and about 15 pounds heavier. There's a lot of Jalen Polk in this guy's game. Mm. There's a lot of Jalen Polk where it's just, kind of, yeah, if the ball comes to me, and there's so much of that in college, this is, it feels to me, I kind of wanted to come in disagreeing with you. I'm not as deep on Boston as you are in terms of the scouting. Maybe I find it on the back end. But it feels to me like this is a wish casting play where everyone's like, oh, he could be great. And it's right. it probably takes him a year or two to figure it all out. And the Niners can't afford that. They simply cannot afford to do it, which brings me to my guy, which is a guy that you and I are in agreement could be the best of the second tier at tackle and is unquestionably a scheme fit for the San Francisco 49ers. And yet I am here to tell you right now, I don't want Monroe Freeling at 27. I don't want him. I don't want him for the one very simple fact. Where is he going to play in 2026? Is this a appropriate way to handle your drafts? Probably not. But you have glaring starter-level needs at a couple of positions. Yep. When you're picking somebody in the first round, they got to start day one. I'm sorry. They have to have an impact and a role on day one. And while I understand that tackle is a very particular thing where it's treated more like a quarterback and they're willing to give a redshirt year, the guy can't play guard. He's too light. And they need a left guard today. And in this draft class, with all of the talent that's there at tackle, first and second round, that second tier is huge. Yeah. There are enough options available to you where you're not losing the upside of a Monroe Freeling, but you are getting the immediate gratification of someone who you can play at left guard, even if he's just in the competition for left guard at camp, for a year or two until Trent Williams takes a step out and goes to live in Houston full time, as opposed to just during training camps. The other aspect of this is, yes, Monroe Freeling, when you think 49ers outside zone tackle in the Joe Staley mold, right?
More incredible foot speed. Yeah, kind of like Mike McGlinchey mold, yeah.
True. Incredible foot speed. You want him out in space, kind of a tight end in a tackle's body. Somebody who can project up as well in terms of size. I don't want that anymore. What did we learn? What did we learn from the final week of the regular season, the divisional playoff game, and then everyone sitting around and watching the Super Bowl? Foot, the ability to work with your feet is incredible. Like, obviously a very important aspect of playing tackle. You need somebody who can maul. Playing the angles game ain't gonna play it anymore in this era of who knows what. It's not even odd. It's not even. You don't know what the front is. They're coming from every which direction. And defensive lines are now being tailored not so that you have a push up the middle and then two fast guys on the outside to create this pocket. Defensive lines are everybody. And you're putting four guys who can press a pocket up front with big strength. And maybe they got a bag on top of that. But if nothing else, they're coming into the quarterback's lap. And guys from the outside and blitzers. In chaos defense, where protections are going to be challenged as a counter to the Shanahan, Kubiak, McVay offense, you need someone who can play guard at tackle. And the beauty of Trent Williams, and frankly, the beauty of a not a Mike McGlinchey, but a Colton McKivitz, is that they're unbelievable. Well, McKivitz to a degree, but a lot of people have suggested over time that McKivitz be transferred to guard. They're wrong, but it's guys who can punch a little bit. Yeah. And I just don't see it with Freeling, and I see too many good options. I just think that the 49ers can have their cake and eat it too in this of all drafts.
I think two things. One, I love the take. I think I, for the most part, agree with you. I think he's an awesome player, and I also think there's going to be some times where you're having Mike McGlinchey flashbacks in the wrong way where you're yelling timber as he falls down because the anchor isn't quite there, but he also like will maul people in the run game. I think he's going to be an awesome player.
Yeah.
He can't play guard. I don't see that. The other thing is there are arguments against guard tackle flexibility, right? Like a lot of coaches want that flexibility. And sometimes you can get bogged down. It's like, well, are they good at either? Mm. You know, Spencer Burford was talking about it. He's like, I want to stay at one position because you can actually, you know, maximize your wealth by playing one position and get good at one job. I think, though, the 49ers are uniquely positioned where it's probably easier to play guard day one. There's probably less on your shoulders, especially if you're protected by Trent Williams on the left. And probably if it's not Jake Brendel, I think it would be, I don't think they would go rookie at center. I think they would have to make a swing for like a Linderbaum. I don't know that they're going to do that, but I think they've been very clear that they trust almost explicitly just veterans at center. So you'd be putting them.
Right. And by the way, as well they should, because of everything that I was just saying about the new modern state of defense and something you and I have been talking about for 2.5 years, Jake, since the Minnesota game.
A lot less
this
year, but especially in 2024.
I mean,
and even coming from 2023.
It was the conversation that you and I had after Brian Flores, Minnesota. Everyone was talking about the cover zero call. You already knew Steve Wilkes was dead. Like, everyone was talking about that. You and I started talking about, when is Brock going to be allowed to slide his own coverages, to man his own front? It has been weaponized. We've been talking about this for 2.5 years. I'm just now starting to see the conversation move this direction towards, oh, that's a new trend. Meanwhile, Sean McVay understood it a year ago, or 2 years ago, in fact, saw it coming and started to get an offensive line that can maul. The Green Bay Packers, while in execution it hasn't been all that great, changed up their offensive line scheme to just get five guys who are effectively all the same position. And if the 49ers want to keep playing the angles game, they're going to get angled out of a playoff spot.
Yeah, the tough part is not just having the guys who have the physicality. It's having the communication and having, like, a really sharp offensive line coach who can understand, like, these are the sort of triggers where it's like, okay, this could break our system. And to set that up where it's like, in the moment, everything's moving so fast, to set up the protection in concert with the play call and also identify what's breaking the rules and communicate that as a center to everybody else while the quarterback's putting people in motion, all that, it's really challenging. And also, not every scheme is going to give centers or anyone the flexibility to change those things. So it's like, someone like McDonald is just going to keep exploiting it, especially when teams like the Patriots had tells.
Yes. Which I didn't see the tell per se, but you did. You know, when you watch back film, sometimes you can like predict what's coming.
On Jared Wilson, sort of always looking at whoever he was going to block. Yeah. Everyone else is sort of like head down, and Jared Wilson's like, I'm blocking you.
I didn't like ever write down like there's a tell, but they did feel, I actually blamed it more on McDaniels and his lack of kind of creativity or advancement since Tom Brady, in that like it was just pretty obvious what they were running on every play. And Kyle has fallen into this trap at times as well. It's not as easy to pick up as, you know, like tipping a pitch in baseball, where if you know, you know, and if you don't, you're like, why are they right on top of everything? But there's that. I'm very curious. You and I, well, I'll speak for myself here. You and I have been, no, I'm speaking for myself. We're trying one more time. Third time's the charm. I have been very positive towards Chris Forster, the 49ers offensive line coach. I do think that he's very good at this. He's also, to this point, an ideologue. And that
he invented the way they run their offensive line scheme in the run game. Literally invented it. Everything's on angles.
Right.
As Jake Brendel phrased it to me. Go on.
And between Kyle and Forster, which, by the way, when it comes to hierarchy of coaches, and I'm putting this into deploy this upcoming offseason when we start looking at other teams and how we want to rank them, just look at like the Dallas Cowboys situation versus the Cardinals situation. What happened there? The Cowboys got the Cardinals offensive line coach, and suddenly the Cowboys actually look functional again. Offensive, and by the way, another reason to sell the Eagles with Jeff Stoutland going out. And this is something I kind of worked on and tried to build up some reporting of, like, who's really good at this? Who's kind of a poser? We've talked about it a bunch in bits and pieces. Brennan Carroll being a good example of, like, this guy has no idea what he's doing. Offensive line coach is like the second most important offensive assistant behind coordinator. I think they're even more important than quarterbacks coach, of which people can name like three of them in the entire league. Right. And that's
quarterbacks coach is mainly being a translator and simplifying and saying, here's our process. Yeah. And it's different for each team, but like for the most part, as I've talked to them, is like, this is what our scheme is asking you to do. Here's what you need to look for. Here are your cues and like setting up a process that you can go through every play.
They're middle management. And that's not to say that some people in middle management aren't important, because there are obviously, there's a delineation of responsibilities and the offensive coordinator can't handle all of it. But an O-line coach is effectively his own department in the company, right? Right. Like, if you don't have a good relationship with your offensive line coach as an offensive coordinator, one of the two of you is about to get fired, full stop. And I don't believe the same on defensive line coach, but the Niners certainly do when it comes to Chris Kucerik. It's all to say how the Niners approach this offseason with the offensive line, which clearly needs at least one new starter and needs depth reinforcements without question, at the minimum, right? How they approach it and the kind of players that they bring in are going to be a big tell as to what it is they're thinking on that side. And I do think there needs to be perhaps not a fundamental change with how they go about it, but a more pragmatic approach to offensive line play in the era of chaos defense in 26. And to be totally honest, I'm not certain that Foerster is going to see it the same way.
I'm with you. I kind of think there's a level of like, well, we know like what we need, and and they've always sort of defended the way they've picked players and not gone for premiums in like two ways. And one, they value skill position players that are at a premium and there's a steep drop off, which is true.
Yes.
For the most part, after a certain round.
Right.
And that they can take guys in round three or four, right, whatever, and shape them. My counter to that is a few things. One, the Seahawks have built something completely different, and you need the physicality up front. So I think that is sort of like a stubborn way to view it, if that's how they just continue to do it. I think they need like Puna Forts at every position on offensive and defensive line. Like, yeah. They basically need guys that up front can immediately like win the leverage battle, because Shanahan said it when he did the pregame, you know, before the Super Bowl. He's like, we ran the ball like 40 times against him in week one, which is why we were able to beat him. We couldn't run the ball at all in the last few games, which, if you're looking at it through a rose-tinted lens, I think he realizes we need a little bit of beef up front. Physically, we could not move them. Right. Tight end was also a component of that, where even when the offensive line actually did okay on a few snaps, you would have a real nightmare situation where you're like, all right, Luke Farrell, time to do something. Nope. Okay.
I mentioned this with Larry. I mean, we actually went through it on the show. While we all now look back and say, oh, the Niners lost that divisional playoff game on the opening kick, which is a totally fair take. It's not wrong. There were moments in the first quarter of that game where, had the Niners gotten going, it could have been interesting.
Absolutely.
And you have the fourth down miss. Was it two fourth down misses in the first one? I haven't looked at the notes recently, but certainly
they had opportunities.
Unquestionably. And I would say that both of the drives in the first quarter were ruined by a failure of non-offensive linemen to make blocks. And it's not to say that the offensive linemen were nailing their blocks, but what does Seattle do? They're so powerful up front, then you think, okay, we got to go to the outside. Well, if you're on the outside, now you have to block Devin Witherspoon. And you might go, oh, he's a corner. That's not a problem. Yeah, it is. Oh, you have to block Nicky Manwari. Oh, you have to block Love. You have to block Job. All of those guys, as the Niners proved during their great playoff runs, 19-23, when they tackle, now you got a real issue. Now you got, if you want to run away from the defensive line, there's no quarter for you out
especially there. Especially without Brandon Ayuk, who's an incredible blocker.
100%.
Like, that was a real nothing factor. Like, that affected their offense all season. And it's not to say they win that game with like Brandon Ayuk just as a blocker.
No.
But they missed that. Like, Pearsall is nowhere near that, and also dealing with the injury. But like, they had a steep drop off in their blocking on the outside, and they couldn't match up on the inside. They needed to take a holistic approach and kind of overhaul. And that's not to say you just need to get a blocking wide receiver.
No.
But you need a little bit of punch there.
You do need punch there. I should also be noted, Juwan Jennings' blocking went off a cliff compared to what he used to be able to do. And even when they went into tight splits, he was having problems. And it's understandable. He broke every bone in his body, according to Juwan Jennings. But yeah, Luke Farrell on the perimeter, done. Tonjes, great pass catcher. You know,
he can do some stuff in space, but like, because he's an effort guy, but he doesn't have the physicality to be an impact blocker.
Not against the Seahawks, you know. And it's like,
he's
and then
trying.
Even Juice, you know, Juice as a blocker has diminished to the point where they had to come up with a new way to get Juice in motion so he could be a viable blocker. So, again, if you're hyper-focused, and you and I are in agreement on this, that the Niners should be hyper-focused on beating the Seahawks because it can all trickle down from there. If you're hyper-focused on that, you need to get bigger, stronger, more physical. Oh, at the same time, you also need to get faster, too. So going and getting... and going and getting a 27, a pick at 27, that's a tackle that won't play for you for at least a year, if not two, by the way. Or, because you're going to have to restructure probably Trent, and that might add another year. Or a Denzel Boston, who probably needs a year, because whenever he played good competition at Washington, his production went off a cliff because he's not a detail-oriented receiver.
Yeah.
He's just a body. Like, that's just not going to work for
me. By the way, just briefly with Trent, I'm curious to see what happens. He's basically got 38 and then like a 20 something million void year. I wonder if they just add another 30 2 years down the road, where it's just like 30 30 30, and you just basically kick the can a little bit, guarantee him a bunch this year, a little next year, and instead of it being 1+1, it's 2+1, and in 3 years you eat a ton of dead money. And just say, well, whatever.
But yeah, you have a bigger cap then, right?
Yeah. I mean, the cap went up 5 to 10 million or whatever, more than expected anyway. It's going to keep going up.
Yeah, I think it's like a 12% rate annually. So just think about if you were able to invest in the stock market and you got 12 on 12 and you're just playing compound interest here, 30 doesn't look like anything in 2 years from now, if it even looks like, for the here and now. So,
by the way, if you've ever looked at the chart that came out recently of the dead money, the Eagles have like almost $0 in dead money. It's pretty incredible.
The Niners, that was a great chart. I presume we saw the same one.
Yeah.
Where the Niners had, I think it was like 107 in dead money plus 9.9 off the cap.
And that was sort of the ethos of last year, was like, let's get a lot of this off the books. They still have a decent amount left, but it's not as dire as it was.
No, they're not doing a Russ Wilson thing where it actually fundamentally screws up how you have to build a roster year over year. They're in a position where they can do anything they want. The question is, what do they want to do? And is there an appetite for cash spending for Jed York? As the cash spending now, the threshold, which used to be about 300, was really, really good. It's probably more like 350, 375 now, is considered very, very good. Is Jed going to adapt to that new reality, or is he just really like that 300 number because it's round and it's easy and he can go buy a bad, you know, fullback for Rangers now? So,
well, you know, they hosted the Super Bowl. They're hosting some soccer games. They got a little cash.
They absolutely do. Just like, you know, with the Giants today, Buster Posey going on KMBR and being like, you know, the fans want us to buy big time, all the free agents. It's just not the reality. And it's like, I'll tell you the reality. You guys make $500 million a year in revenue, and you're spending less than half of that on payroll. There's the reality.
Well, yeah. I have a video I need to send you about, there's some like illegal racket that owners have going on with concessions. We can talk about that later.
Is it Jerry Jones involved? We talking legendary status?
I'm sure he's involved.
Jerry Jones and the New York Yankees basically monopolizing the high-end concession market in American sports is some good business. Let's put it that way. We digress. Jake, do you have a prospect you want to talk about?
Sure. I think the initial idea that we had before we went into this was to mention three guys who were going to test off the charts.
I did not pick that one up when you laid it down. I just had three guys.
Three guys. I thought
that's
your
a good
idea.
Conceit for you, though. I'll just throw three random guys out there later, but you have like a good, like that looks like show preparation and a concept and an idea. And I'm just going to be like,
I'll just name one guy who I think the way I interpreted it was, some guy who's going to go to the NFL combine and test well, and everyone's going to go, ooh, this guy.
Was that your idea or my idea?
It was your idea.
That's a great idea. I really like it. I wish I would have actually known that I said that.
I know the three prospects you sent me didn't follow this rule at all.
Not even close.
I was confused.
They not even great, remotely.
They're not going to test well.
How about this? I'll give you three guys that won't test well that I think should still get drafted. Jake's got the guys who will test well. I got the guys who won't.
Let's do that. You give me three guys who won't test well.
Meanwhile, I got a doctor's appointment. I might have to bring up dementia. Bidening over here. Jesus.
All right. I'll shoot three names.
Thank you.
All right. We got Gabe Jackus, whatever.
We loved Gabe Jackus at the Shrine Bowl, right? Or was it the
season? Yeah, just yoked, just a perfect physical specimen who I think is really athletic and probably lacking a little polish, but sometimes you go, ooh, there's something there. Edge out of Illinois.
Who was my comp for him? Did I say he was like a souped-up Ronald Blair?
I think you did. I don't necessarily know that I agree with that, but no. I like it. Ronald Blair, by the way, is a coach for the 49ers, in case
Ronald
anyone...
Blair had a great 2020 season when nothing else mattered. I just remember Ronald Blair getting it in.
He was tremendous.
Good five tech. You could slide him to three on third down. Get more Ronald Blairs.
Sure. Yeah, I like it. I like it. I think he's a lot more athletic than that.
He is.
Let me go Iowa. Iowa offensive line is always going to have guys that test well. I don't actually think Jennings Dunker is going to test that well.
Depends on how much coffee he drinks beforehand. Did you watch that video?
No, I just imagine that he's on the same diet that Mike Vrabel's on.
Yeah, it's well, he's a special specimen, and he's going to be, I think, here's a prediction. I think he's going to be the character of day one and two of the NFL draft. I feel like he's going to be the guy who just gets, they're going to talk
like
to him.
Like Ben Bush, where they do a thing on the side and they're like, hey, Ben, you want to show us this insane smoothie that you drank to gain 115 pounds?
He's in the exact same mold, except he's got like a big old mullet and he just like leaves his gut out all the time. He's a specimen. He's a beautiful man. We love our Jennings Dunker, the person. We're a little torn on him as a prospect.
I showed Jennings Dunker as I was watching the Shrine Bowl. I showed him to my girlfriend. I'd be like, look at his belly. She's like, what is, she was like physically disgusted. I was like, you don't understand.
No, yeah. You see, Jake does the show with me because he understands the ideal physical male form. That's right. What he's about. And
that's right.
Yeah, your girlfriend, she would never get it with me. But I, if I show Jennings Dunker to my wife, she's like, oh, an upgraded model. Fantastic.
Wow. It's good for him. Shout out, Logan Jones is my next guy from Iowa. I don't know if he's like a peak athlete, but I just think all those Iowa guys usually test pretty well.
Yeah.
And I like him. I like him. I don't know how much I like him yet. I think he gets off the ball quick. I think he does a lot of the things in space you want to see. He's also wide. Like he's not like an undersized center that you're sort of used to. Like he's got some heft to him. Mm-hmm. And I think he moves pretty well, which is why I think some of those explosive test scores could be good.
What are we thinking here is like Zach Frazier mold.
Mm.
Is that too aggressive? Zach Frazier was like crazy strong.
I like that. I like that. I thought Frazier was a little stiffer, but probably stronger.
Maybe a Linderbaum in same school, same.
Yeah,
everything.
I think Linderbaum was like such a one of one, but I do think somewhere in that range, if you're being optimistic, of physical talent, we'll see. The last guy I'll mention who gonna get some like Graham Barton comparisons because he's a tackle. That is should play center, Trey Zune out of Texas A&M,
who I
don't like him at tackle, but I really like him on the inside because there's a little too much like forward lean and eagerness to get involved. But at the same time, there aren't many people who displace players the way he does.
Yep.
And with the level of motor and power and speed, he's awesome. He's awesome. Like not many guys in the draft just try as hard as he does.
Yep.
And he pops off the tape in terms of physical talent and athleticism.
There's no question in my mind. I mean, we started getting into Overcrown, the tackle. He played right tackle for Texas A&M, and we're still big on him. But when you know the way that it goes is they don't. It's hard to get cut ups of it's an offensive line, so you get the entire offensive line as a cut up.
Yep.
And if you're lucky, you get some sky cam in there, all that stuff. You can't take your eyes off of Zune. He's clearly the best offensive lineman.
That's a crazy offensive line.
They have like four draftable dudes.
Yeah.
That was the best offensive line money could buy outside of Miami and Indiana, which that worked out pretty well for them. Yeah, Zune was clearly the best on that offensive line. He was at what they played him at left tackle.
Left tackle, Basantis, the left guard, was up there. He is a guy that I was. What'd you say about him?
He's good too.
Yeah, he's really good. He's someone where you're like, I don't know, and then you're like, man, he might be what the Niners need. The problem is, you look at his photo and he's a little bit cross-eyed, and you go, is it okay? I can't hold that against you. That's a really stupid reason to hold something against you. But he starts to grow on you. That O-line, that left side, had two guys that really, really could create space. And again, I think Zune's probably better suited for center than guard. But
I like him at guard. I thought he looked good in his one-on-one drills.
I think he's athletic enough.
Yeah.
Sorry, there's two beautiful birds that are staring outside, just making very direct eye contact with me. They're beautiful. Fun. Little finches.
Meanwhile, U.S. goes up 3-1 on Latvia. Suck it, Riga. So I actually have really disliked watching this American hockey game because they're getting outworked by the Latvians. And the whole point of how they put together this U.S. Olympic hockey team is they'll just get a bunch of grinders. That will somehow take down Canada. And then they're getting outworked by Latvia.
Speaking of Latvia, it was not Latvia, but it was the thing I sent you last night, did you happen to get a chance to look at it? The Serbian spellings of NBA players?
It's incredible.
It's one of the greatest things that Magic Johnson.
Magic Johnson. I spent a week and a half in Croatia this past summer. And let me tell you, the Baltic states have it figured out, man. They're living right. I mean, it was a pretty rough go for a long time. Don't get me wrong. But
yeah.
I'm a big fan of the Baltics. Not that Latvia is a Baltic nation.
Before you give me your three guys, I'm just going to, for anyone who doesn't know, this is the Baltics, the Croatians Serbia. Oh, my God. What are we doing here?
Well, that's still a Baltic state.
Yeah, it's still a Baltic state. But they translated like these like famous NBA players, triple doubles, like all-time triple doubles.
You going to throw it up on the screen?
I can't. But I'll try. Give me a second here. Let's be.
You want me to pull it up? I'll pull it up. I can get it up faster.
I can pull it up. Here we go.
Okay.
Here we go.
Okay. Okay. Good luck to you. It's not going great.
It's here we go. Here we go. Here we go.
I see none of this.
There we go.
It's sort of up. Here we go. Oh yeah, I got rid of you.
this is why people subscribe.
That's right. You should become a member. Maybe we can get a producer.
So we got Russell Westbrook, Nikola Jokic, Oscar Robertson, Magic Johnson, LeBron James, Jason Kidd. Luka Doncic is the same, which is incredible.
Yeah, makes sense.
I like that there's just all the James or DZ, James Harden, Wilt Chamberlain, and DeMontis Sabonis. As well.
It's just a fascinating move. To be like, also LeBron has no translation, neither does Wilt.
Yeah, they're like, we can't do, LeBron is one of one. But James, LeBron James.
Jims. Dezion Kidd is pretty incredible. All right.
Yep.
That's enough of that. Let me tell you, get that shit off my screen. All right, we're doing show. Let me tell you about two corners and a quarter. Okay? I got two corners for you. One of which I think is going to go higher than initially expected, and that could be even day one. The other is somebody who is going to be right there on day three, might even go undrafted, and I just think is going to be a pro. Like, just it might even like go into a camp, and then, whoops, he's our week one starter, and actually, yep. That's pretty good. So let me tell you about Chris Johnson from San Diego State. This dude is a baller. He's a baller. He's got crazy fluid hips. He allowed a 16.1 passer rating last year at San Diego State. 16.1. That's like Drake May in the playoffs level for everybody. Really fast processor. Unbelievable ball skills. This guy's a zone corner. Don't get me wrong. Like, he's... He wants to play with vision. He's a vision corner. But he reminds me a lot of Rasul Douglas, the former... Well, but Jake's gone. I'll just keep talking. reminds me a lot of Rasul Douglas, who was just an outstanding corner for the Buffalo Bills in his heyday, still sticking around every now and again. I don't even know if we should bring Jake back, for what it's worth. What the hell was that? Where'd you go?
I just went on delay, about a 5.5 second delay after I pulled up the Croatian thing. Continue. I agree with your corner. I love him and I want to talk about him. I didn't want to interrupt your flow.
Well, there's not much flow, much like when Chris Johnson is playing corner and you're trying to feed your number one receiver. You just ain't getting there. He's not going to test great. He's probably going to run in the 4.5s. I don't care.
He's a technique god.
Unbelievable. And every play, you're like, man, it's funny because when you watch him, and this has a lot to do with his level of competition in the Mountain West, to be fair.
Yep.
But when I was watching him, I'm like, you know what? He kind of reminds me of like Kamari Lassiter. Like there's something there. And then you're like, well, Kamari Lassiter was like big. And this guy's not technically big, but he plays huge because he's just always, always jumping balls. He's perfect in where he's at. He's making these little deft moves to make you think that you have a window to throw it. And then he closes it first thing. He's just two steps ahead of everybody. And again, level of competition is a concern, and I do think that's going to keep him out of the first round, but there are going to be a couple of teams late in the first that need corners. It's a great corner class that probably doesn't help him as well.
Really,
someone's
going to
fall in love with him.
Yep. It's it reminds me a little bit of the guy from Toledo, Avery Smith, who I really like, who's great at the Shrine Bowl, who, again, not loving the speed, but like just in terms of technique and making guys' lives difficult, really like him.
What do you make of my Rasul Douglas comp?
I like the Rasul Douglas comp. I'm trying to think of in terms of speed, if Rasul Douglas isn't a little bit quicker, but
he would get beat over the top a lot. He was a cover two, cover four corner.
Okay. I mean, if the measurables sort of line up, I like that comp. I think in terms of play style, in terms of being technique oriented, the way Johnson sort of compensates, like Richard Sherman didn't have elite speed, but he just had the brain. And I think people forget that corner isn't all about speed. I mean, it's great if you have it, but you can do a lot without it.
It's so funny you mentioned that because let me just mention my second guy. This guy named Josh Moten. He's at Southern Miss. I highly recommend, if you're trying to figure out anything about Josh Moten, who is a name that just came on my radar through a very loose conversation. And it's like, well, you know, we were talking about Jeremiah Smith. And then it comes up, Josh Moten had a pick on Jeremiah Smith when he was playing for Marshall under Charles Huff 2 years ago. And then he went with Huff to Southern Miss. He's been to like seven schools. It's not a great sign. But he absolutely, he dominated him. He was fantastic. Now, Ohio State won the game easily because they just kept running it his way. So there's a little Sauce Gardner there. But Sauce Gardner got a first-round pick this past year and has a huge contract. This guy is a ghost. He is just on you. The hips are crazy loose. He sees the field really, really well. He had a pick on Smith. I saw him lock down Carnell Tate. I saw him lock down Emeka Ebuka. By the way, 2 years ago, Ohio State's wide receiver core. Holy crap. This dude was, at times, the best player on the field with the Ohio State offense that won the national championship 2 years ago. So how does that guy not get drafted? Well, there's obviously a lot going on. There's a lot more than just you had a great game against Ohio State. He did have 10 PBUs, or passes defended specifically, and five picks last year. But again, Sun Belt competition, all that. The fact that he's jumped around to a bunch of different schools that no one really came knocking, this is baseless conjecture, but it makes me, you know, he wasn't the biggest guy, so there's that. And then second, you know, it makes you wonder if, you know, he's the brightest bulb. There's no nice way to put that. That's an issue. That's a huge issue. And I think we've run into it a little bit this year with the 49ers with Renardo Green, who has all of the physical traits to be a legitimately great corner. He can play man, he can play zone, he tackles pretty well. Like, there's a lot of things that you go, this guy should be a really special player. And then you watch him, and he doesn't know the plays, and he's constantly confused, and the stuff between the ears just clearly isn't where it needs to be, and maybe it can catch up, but then, you know, you spend some time talking to him and talking to people about him, and they go, I don't know if it's ever going to catch up. The smartness at corner in this era of cover six, cover seven, cover nine is so important. You can't just backpedal and then you know, whatever's in front of me, I'll cover. You are operating on RIPLAs and all of these very advanced things that at the NFL level have to be second nature to you.
I agree.
Intelligence at corner is going to be huge. It's why I think Chris Johnson, who is clearly playing two or three steps ahead of everybody, even at the Mountain West level, is going to be somebody who moves up boards, and why Josh Moten, who has better coverage ability straight up and does a lot of the same things that I really like with Chris Johnson, albeit in a slightly more slender frame, that he might not get drafted, but might end up in a camp, and maybe we had it wrong all the time, but it's going to be really physically talented. By the way, Chris Johnson, also a really good special teamer.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Pops off the tape.
Those are my two corners, one at the high end, one at the low end. I like both of them a lot. And now let's get people angry, Jake.
Love it.
I think Miller Moss is going to be a good NFL quarterback.
I loved Miller Moss 2 years ago. I was talking your ear off about Miller Moss. You don't have to convince me on Miller Moss.
Miller Moss wasn't happy that he didn't take Missouri's money. Could have changed the season pretty significantly if he would have just taken their money. I mean, I get when Fernando Mendoza turned down the money. I get that. You're going to a playoff team. It's, you know, Miller Moss turning down the money was less than ideal. And kind of a hit to the ego when you go to Louisville. But he has so many traits that Kyle and Kyle's ilk are going to love. He clearly enjoys the progression of quarterback. You see his head constantly moving and not in the, oh my God, what's happening way, but in a scanning the field, understanding the operation, first, two, three, and he can run a little bit, but not enough to where it's going to make the defense reevaluate what it is they're doing in life, which is kind of like a perfect sweet spot, to where he's never actually spied, but that's a mistake, but you can't actually do it. But should we? I don't really. And then you're green dogging him, and then you're not really. It's a whole thing. So he's got that. You can run some read option with him. You can run some RPO with him. But I love the accuracy. He does not have a big arm. He has a very accurate arm. He throws a very catchable ball. It's a nice spiral. It's always in good placement. This guy has backup quarterback who takes over and suddenly the team gets better written all over him. And if I'm Minnesota, I'm valuing him very high because I think he beats out J.J. McCarthy immediately. If I'm a team like the Colts, who they probably already think they have it, I'm trying to bring him in. If I'm the 49ers and I'm moving on from Mac Jones, which we both are in general agreement, we don't think it's going to happen, but it could.
Mm. Mm.
Instead of bringing in the veteran, I'm bringing this guy in. They might trade him.
They really might.
Okay. I'm sure we'll have ample time to talk about it. If I'm Sean McVay, Sean McVay is going to love Miller Moss. Now, there is something to be said for, again, much like we had the conversation with offensive line, do you need to have the big-armed quarterback to combat the we're playing zone in the back, pushing up front, can you stand and deliver? Is the era of the prototypical quarterback nigh once again?
Right.
There's a legitimate question to be asked there. But, man, if you're looking for somebody who can just come in, one, two, three, what needs to be done, I'm going to get it done, Miller Moss is the guy. He is the guy in this draft.
I like him a lot. I think I was really impressed with him at USC. I mean, they tailed off at the end of the season, but I liked a lot of what he did, and I don't like a lot of what USC does all the time. So I'm with you on Miller Moss. I would like to I got distracted because somebody asked a really good question that I want to get to.
I would love to answer good questions.
I was trying to think of the answer for it. Tyler, if you had to take a guess at who the Niners will draft with pick 27, who would it be? And will Kyle change his mind and draft O-line in the first round?
So let's take the second part of it first. They do not have a fundamental disagreement with taking offensive linemen in the first round. They did it with Mike McGlinchey.
Yep.
On a very premium pick. Their fundamental disagreement is with the inflation on specifically tackles that comes along with the NFL draft in the same way that quarterbacks are inflated to where like a Ty Simpson, who should be like an early day three, late day two guy, is getting love for first round because of projectability. So they have a rubric that Chris Foerster has put together on what these guys are. He obviously feels that he can get more out of less, and so he doesn't put as much emphasis on the incredible physical. If they see somebody who has elite first-round talent, and they give him a first-round talent grade, and he's still somehow sitting there at 27, which is an absolute rarity because the Niners have been drafting very late for a very long time now, save for the one time that they didn't and totally botched it and then didn't get first-round picks for a couple of years. Because of that, they are never in a position, because of positional inflation, to take a guy who is a true first-round pick in the late 20s or, you know, 30s.
A guy who they believe deserves that slot. Right.
They do not go above. And so they end up in a situation where they don't draft a guy because they're never willing to take a swing on a guy because a round or two earlier than they have him graded. They believe their grades are sacred. So when a guy like Dominic Pooney, who they had a third-round grade on, falls to them in the third round, bam, done, no questions asked. The problem, again, is you have guys who are undraftable on many boards going in the fourth round because they're a tackle.
Correct.
And the Niners just will not go off the rubric.
I agree. I do think I'm just going to give you my answer.
Yeah.
It is a tackle. It's Caden Proctor.
I think so too.
That's your pick right now?
It's been my pick for five months, yeah. Jake. I see no reason not to.
I was just wondering if you'd change it. Dieter texted me months ago. I think he, because he is, some people have him as OT1. I think that's frankly idiotic.
Yeah.
I think it's insane. I think Maui Goa and Fano are way ahead of them. You could make an argument for Lomu too. I think the physical talent's glaring. He needs to lose weight. I bet he comes into the combine a little lighter.
Mm-hmm.
And,
which is scary when you consider how fast he moves at that weight.
But I think the tape is worrying. It's really inconsistent.
Yes.
That said, I cannot think of a better fit at that slot at 27 who could play guard, a better person to learn from. With there's not a lot of guys who have any sort of physical similarities to Trent Williams. Like Caden Proctor, I'm not going to make the one-to-one comp because it's not. But there is a little bit of similarity there, and I kind of think Trent would enjoy that.
I mean, they both don't make any sense. Like, they're both that Doughboy is the best athlete on the field.
The prospect of him at 27 sliding into left guard, learning from Trent, probably having some growing pains, probably having some ugly moments, but also having some moments where you're like, oh, he just tossed Byron Murphy to the ground. They haven't had a single person that could do that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And will he be there? Maybe not. But at the same time, I think because of the weirdness of his tape, because of like some weight concerns and other stuff, I really do think it's in the realm of possibility that he's there at 27. And in most years, I wouldn't say that.
It is just, and I have been saying this legitimately since September. This is the perfect draft for the Niners to luck into what they've needed to do without having to change their principles. I will maintain Proctor. Freeling could also be there too. There's good options.
Because I bet Freeling goes before him.
Probably. Though he's not going to be a scheme fit everywhere because a lot of teams, again, are recognizing the modern game requires a little bit something different. And maybe I don't want them to take Freeling. I think it could work out in the long run, but then I don't know if Kyle Shanahan's going to be around to find out. And then you have a whole different thing.
And I think some teams are going to like Lamu too. So I think there's like a round where it's like Maui Goa, both Utah tackles and Freeling go ahead of him. And there's a route where like he goes second.
He goes 14th overall. Yeah. Totally.
Right. So
can I throw out one more name that I legitimately think is a real option for them? I think C.J. Allen, the Georgia linebacker, is a real option for them at 27 in that you get the future, but you also get the now, and you can play him at will immediately.
Don't get me excited, Dieter.
I'm just saying there's going to be linebackers there late in the first. Okay, I don't know if it's going to be exactly 27. They will have done their scouting. Don't forget that they were willing to give Dre Greenlaw a tremendous amount of money.
So my only question is, do you think they do that? They say they spend 27 on C.J. Allen, and they go, let's trade D. Winters for a whatever
seventh
pick. Yes.
Sixth.
A sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a real option.
Okay. I can't argue against EJ Allen because I fundamentally think he's awesome.
I mean, he could go at 20, right? Like, he could be off the board for Tampa at 15. Like, it's not to say that he's going to absolutely be there at 27. But if he's there at 27, I'm not saying they're going to trade up for him either. I'm just saying if he's there at 27, they're going to have a very hard time in their own building taking somebody other than a guy who is clearly a top 15 talent sitting for us at 27 where we can play him right now. And if Fred starts to slip at all coming off of this injury, shit, we're covered.
And there's an element of like, hey, if you want to keep the front the same and be hyper aggressive and borderline stupid, CJ Allen's going to fill for you.
100%.
Like you're not going to have to worry about being undersized. He's going to run through blocks and he's going to close gaps in the run.
What were their two fundamental, amongst so many, but what were two of their biggest mistakes last year?
Well, they had communication issues in the secondary.
I'm saying personnel-wise. Sorry. If you ask John Lynch,
Gifford and the lightness that they had at linebacker, or the defensive tackles they had up front?
Okay. It was a bad phrasing of the question because
very
there's roughly a million ways we can go in. Here are two of their biggest regrets. If I'm coming from the outside and having heard this a little bit. One, Nick Martin. An obvious, clear regret. So they've already messed that up, right? Why did they take Nick Martin 75 overall? Because they knew they had messed up in letting Dre Greenlaw out of the building to the point where they fly to Texas and say, baby, please come back. Baby, come on. They knew they fucked up one way. Then they have to go and they have to cover up the fuck up and they fuck up. They're chasing good money with bad money. So now they get the reprieve. They're at 27, and they can look at it. Now, you can also make the argument that this is just perpetuating the cycle and that CJ Allen won't work and all that. I don't think that.
Yeah.
I think this would be a home run for them. It's an easy win. It's an easy sell. And again, if he's sitting there at 27 with all of their needs, maybe weak side linebacker isn't number one, but you're going to have a very hard time convincing, if the people in that room are competent, which we don't necessarily know them to be, you're going to have a very hard time convincing anybody that you shouldn't take that guy, who is clearly like a special player.
He's a dude.
He's
a dude.
In the same way, by the way, can I just throw this out here?
Yeah.
Josh Downs is number one on my board. It's not even particularly close right now. Josh Downs' brother, Caleb. He's number one on my board. Okay, there is a huge gap between him and two. So,
I think Arvell Reese is up there,
and it's a big gap still. I mean, I think I'm more of a Bain man than a Reese man, but we will have this all out.
I think Arvell Reese is like what, why am I forgetting his name? Plays for the Packers, used to play for the Cowboys. Micah Parsons.
Yes, there we go.
Won't stop talking. I think like when they tried to play him at linebacker and didn't work, Arvell Reese can like actually play linebacker. And now would you want a guy that's just pure edge? Yeah, but like, okay. Anyway, his tape is crazy.
You put him in a big Fangio McDonald system?
I think he can work in any system, but he would probably be best used as a 3-4 outside backer.
I really fear, he won't get there because he'll go to the Jets at 2, but my God, can you imagine him if Baltimore wanted to put something together and trade up? If he falls to 3 or 4 and Baltimore is like, we're doing this, that's scary.
Yep.
But that's never going to happen, so I don't even know why I suggest it. It's all to say that I view Allen in a similar like oeuvre to Downs. There's something that's just clear and obvious and there's no debate. Downs might be the best prospect that I have. I didn't tell you. I've been really deep on the Downs. He might be the best prospect I've seen in 5 years. I'm having a hard time figuring out who's better than him. And you know how I feel about safeties.
Yep.
If for some reason Downs gets anywhere outside of the top 10, the answer is very simply take another first round pick and get him, because he solves a decade's worth of problems for your football team.
I'm with you. I'm with you.
I would I'd give the Trey Lance package for Caleb Downs.
I disagree, but I like where your head's at.
I love him.
Next question. Tyler, what do you guys think of Omar Cooper? I've heard Barrow say the Niners like him. I watched him a little bit yesterday. I was a little underwhelmed. Yeah. I don't dislike him, but it didn't pop off the tape for me. I got to watch more. Because he's a guy that played at Indiana and plays through the ball really well and seems to just like do his job effectively. I'm not down on him. I'm not high on him. I need to watch more. But I watched him last night and I was a little underwhelmed in terms of like how people were talking about him.
Some like Robert Woods in there. Not as sudden.
Yeah, like a functional, really solid number two who does his job and does everything you ask of him, but isn't necessarily like...
I don't think there's a particularly great skill set there. And so I'm having a hard time figuring out the tiers in this wide receiver class.
People keep talking about it like they're listing all these guys that are, you know, in the top 100. And I'm like, a lot of these guys, like to me... I'm like, Cornell Tate is one, and yes, everything else comes after that.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not a big Tyson guy, personally.
Neither am I.
He just doesn't stack up. I mean, when I think about, like, okay, they might be top 100 this year, and it is a deep class, to be fair. I really do think it's deep. But there's a lot of guys like Omar Cooper who I think that their value is being inflated because there's not a lot of other positions that have much going on for them this year. It's like corners,
yep.
Tackles, maybe offensive line in general. I really do like this offensive line class, though it's more meaty middle than up top, even though we'll get some guys up top. Corners, tackles, like there's no good tight ends outside of Sadiq. You're just taking flyers after that.
I think there are good tight ends, but not well-rounded ones, yeah. At least initially. I think they can develop, but yeah.
Running back is like round four down. After Love, linebacker, it's very top heavy, very top. There's like four guys who you're like, hell yeah. And then the rest of them, you're like, what the hell is this? Safety, it's pretty top heavy as well, to the point where like the Toledo kid is probably a first round player. Like,
and that's, as I mentioned, somebody I'm lower on than most. I'm right. Lower on than most because he's a guy that people go, ooh, he hits hard.
He's
going to get
Downs.
Crazy comparisons.
It's like Downs and then like some day two,
Thiemann,
day three guys.
From Oregon I like.
Yeah.
I think like, he just is quick, but not he's not a big guy, does the right thing.
We get into real flyer territory where you're just guessing, which is what we're all doing right now. But like defense, right. it's not a great defensive end class. It's not a great defensive tackle class. Yeah. Not a great running back class. Terrible quarterback class. Terrible. Abysmal.
Yeah. I'm with you.
So with that, it's like, well, this wide receiver is pretty good. And then it's like, oh, guess what? You're a round two pick now. And you're like, oh,
yep.
Okay. I don't know why we're doing inflation.
It's a weird class. It's a weird class where there's guys, it's like, oh, he's ranked 45. I'm like, is he a fifth round pick?
Yeah. No, yeah. That's what it looks like. And you think about, you know, previous draft classes where you're like, okay, here's like 12 really good guys. And then you compare these guys to those guys as prospects. And you have to remove, you know, the knowledge that comes afterwards. But like, you're like, come on, this guy doesn't compare. They don't even come close. Like the idea that like Jordan Tyson can be had in the same conversation as a Malik Nabers is laughable. And yet they're considered like, oh, that's the second best. It's like, get the fuck up out of here. It's just embarrassing yourself.
I'm with you. I think that's kind of it for comments for today. We'll be back next week.
Yes.
I got a full diet of content coming next week. Remember, leave comments for a mailbag. Doing a mailbag. I'm putting out my first top 50 board. Got the film. Going to record film today.
Nice.
Throw in the comments. Anyone you want me to watch for Behind the Curtain. I got four different things coming out next week. So what else we got?
That's it. We're going to talk. We're going to go through the entire NFL. We're going to fix the 49ers as we do every week.
And if you get someone who wants to sponsor the show.
Yeah. Shoot us an email. We are willing to take money. We'd love to build this entirely out of sickos like you who are members of the channel, and we do want that to be the foundation of the diet so that Jake can buy better equipment so that he doesn't have to drop off halfway through the stream and things of that nature. But you know, food, though, you know, do I need it? Probably not. We'd love to do it that way. We're also willing to do sponsorships. Now, here's the thing. You got to be cool. You got to be cool. Because heaven knows Jake and I are not cool. And
Palantir keeps reaching out, but I don't know if they're a,
yeah,
like, they're a scheme fit.
I told Lockheed Martin no. We don't want to be doing, we don't want to be peddling, you know, some toxic nonsense. Like, you got to be cool. You got to be cool. And I think our rates are exceptionally reasonable because we want to be with cool people. And frankly, we've not done this up to this point because we don't think that there's a lot. You know, we've turned down 24 already. At least if I'm just using my email, I don't know how many you've turned down, Jake, on the basis of, no, man, you ain't cool. Like, I'm not peddling your swill. Yeah. So if you're a cool person, you like the show, you're a sicko, you want to get in with us into a financial bed, we can make it for you.
That's it?
That's it. Also, give us money. Bye.